Today is the 25th of December, 2021, Christmas. It doesn't always happen that we give a talk on Christmas, but sometimes Christmas coincides with either the Saturday night or the Wan Pra, the lunar observance night. So sometimes we give a talk on Christmas and sometimes we don't. And I remember I gave a talk on Christmas right when I got called back from Thailand to come and take up duties as co-abbot with Ajahn Kurnadamo. But I began as sole abbot for a little while because I got called back so that Longpo Pasano and all of the other Abhayagiri Ajahns could go to Thailand and for the 100th birth anniversary of Longpo Cha. Came back December 18th, 2017. And of course, as people remember, on October 9th, 2017, the fires had happened, October 9th and 10th, 11th, maybe about the 9th through the 13th of October 2017. That was when the fires came through here. And so when I came back, I got to see we drove through the devastation. It was still all burnt down houses, and now it's mostly been rebuilt. And a lot of the trees are growing up fresh, and a lot of the grass and greenery, it's growing up now, and now we have a lot of rain and a lot of snow in the mountains. So I remember December 25th, 2017, that coincided either with a Saturday night or a lunar observance. I think it might have been a lunar observance. And I was very, very sick. I actually got very sick, and there was nobody else to give the talk. So it really just fell to me, and I couldn't really speak. I had laryngitis. I had like a really bad sore throat. And so this was pre-COVID, so this was when being sick wasn't a problem as much. It was like, now I'm afraid to get sick. I think everybody might think I have COVID, and so I don't want to get sick at all. It's super like fastidious with taking tons of vitamin D and trying to not get sick ever. But back in the different era when we would get sick and it wasn't a problem, and I had laryngitis, so I was going to give the talk, and I felt terrible. It's one of the worst flus I ever had, actually. And I had actually been in India just before that, and I never got that sick in India. And I got back here, and I got really sick. So, my voice was not really working so well. So it was kind of like, I've got to talk like this. trying to give a talk in what I think of as like giving a talk in Batman voice. I gave a talk in Batman voice. But it worked, and just sort of made do with whatever was coming up. And sometimes we just have to do that. You know, we can't really get away from what we have to do. Even if we're sick, we might still have to do some sort of duty or do something. And so we just make the best of it, of that particular situation. Now I feel very good. I don't have sickness right now. Sometimes it's easier to give a talk when you have a lot of dukkha, bodily dukkha or even mental dukkha, when we're feeling well and physically healthy and at ease. It's kind of like, okay, well, there's nothing much to think about, nothing much to contemplate. We're not really trying to get out of the dukkha because we feel good, we feel at ease temporarily. So Longpo Cha would say that, yeah, being happy, being at ease is okay, but then there's a danger to it because we don't reflect, we don't contemplate, because we feel good already. And if we're suffering, we'll think about it, we'll be looking for a way out. And so our mind, dukkha, can have a brightening quality on the mind, actually. And so that's one of the benefits of struggling or going through hardships in the practice, is it has a brightening quality on the mind if we relate to it correctly. And when we're happy and at ease, it can actually have a dulling quality on the mind. We might feel like there's nothing much to do. We don't really need to get out of it. We don't need to reflect. We don't need to contemplate. So that's why we have the precepts. That's why we have the slightly more austere than lay life structure in the monastery, where we don't have dinner, or we have the various precepts that we follow. So that turns up the dial a little bit, the dukkha dial. That turns the dukkha dial up a few notches so we can reflect and contemplate and have that, achieve that brightened quality of mind. At tea time, one of the reflections coming up was the way that consciousness works, the way we use our awareness. Very much the practice, if we think of the Buddha's teaching, the six sense bases, this makes up our body and mind. And this is the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind as the sixth sense base. The eye sees forms, the ear hears sounds, the nose smells odors, the tongue is the tasting organ, the body, the whole body as a whole, the skin organ feels tactile sensations, and the mind thinks and proliferates. So there's the mind and the mind objects, the objects of mind. And when we learn how to meditate, or we practice meditation, or we just use the word practice, what we're practicing is actually learning how to direct awareness. And so our awareness is always being directed out one of these six sense bases. So if I'm looking at the floor, or I'm looking at somebody in the room, then my eye consciousness, the eye, is seeing a form. And then there's the eye consciousness, which is perceiving that form. The coming together of the three is eye contact. And based on eye contact, then there's feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So if I see something I don't like, that would be like unpleasant eye contact. Or if I see something I like, that would be pleasant eye contact. Or if I see something I'm indifferent about, that would be neutral eye contact. The same with the ear. So if I hear something I like, if I hear some music I like, then that would be pleasant ear contact. If I hear some sound I don't like, for example, the woodpeckers pecking on the Dhamma hall, on the walls, that's a sound I don't like, so that's unpleasant ear contact. If I hear something that is neutral, like any sound that maybe doesn't affect me very much, that would be neutral ear contact. If we have the nose contact, so if I'm perceiving something with the nose, for example, some nice incense, lighting incense for the shrine, that's pleasant nose contact. If there's something like an unpleasant smell, we can use our imagination, things that are unpleasant that we don't like, that smell bad, and that's unpleasant nose contact, or things that are more neutral, like we're normally just experiencing neutral nose contact. Food, the tongue contacting food that we like. So this is, say we like cheesecake contacts the tongue, we experience pleasant tongue contact. Say there's something bitter or some sort of bitter medicine that we don't like, that's unpleasant tongue contact. Bodily contact, we experience a comfortable sensation or pleasant sensation on our body, that's pleasant bodily contact. Something unpleasant, like getting injured or cut, that would be unpleasant bodily contact. And then the mind, when we have, say, we can have either good thoughts or nice thoughts or good ideas, that would be pleasant mind contact, or we can have unpleasant or like bad thoughts, that would be unpleasant mind contact, you know, memories, unpleasant memories of, say, being made fun of or ridiculed, or an unpleasant interaction that we had, that would be unpleasant mind contact. So we have the pleasant, the unpleasant, the neutral of these six sense bases. So that's our whole experience of life, and it's just that much. And our awareness, our consciousness, the awareness is always going out one of these six sense bases. And so we learn how to more consciously through mindfulness direct our awareness. Say when we're doing Anapanasati, then directing our awareness to the sensation at the tip of the nose, that's a bodily contact type sensation, and we're putting the awareness there, meaning we're just feeling at that location, and the awareness isn't going out the eyes or the ears and so on. So there's something that mysterious that happens when we do that, is that the attention or the awareness gets pulled away here and there. So the awareness gets pulled here and there in some way, and we don't really know how it happens. So that's the director who's in the background. There's somebody in the background or something in the background that's saying, be aware of this, be aware of that. Focus your attention here, focus your attention there, focus your attention on this pleasant sensation, focus your attention on that unpleasant memory, focus your attention on that pleasant smell, focus your attention on that critical thought of that other person. So there's something mysterious happening in the background, which is causing the awareness to jump around in this way, and that's what the Buddha called, that's ignorance and craving. That's in the background, and it's very subtle and very mysterious and very insidious and hard to deal with, and it's the cause of suffering. So that's what we want to deal with in the practice. We want to look at that cause of suffering. It's also the cause of different forms of gratification and happiness, but those forms of happiness are temporary. And so that temporary happiness, when we have temporary happiness, like for example, we get a Christmas present and we're happy with it, and then the next day we're tired of it. So that's temporary happiness. That's what we call in Pali, that's a very important term, viparinama dukkha, the dukkha of the transitory nature of things, the dukkha of change. And so within happiness, there's an inherent suffering in it. It's not true and lasting happiness. And so how can we direct awareness so that we get closer to true and lasting well-being and happiness? So we have to find some way to gain insight into and deal with this director, this puppet master who's in the background. And the Buddha talks about contemplating impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self. That's the three characteristics of all conditioned things. That's anicca, dukkha, and anatta. Not self, the not self nature of things, like we think of the body and the mind as we train the mind to start thinking of it as not self, not me, not mine. Because if we were to take the body and mind as self, then when they change and eventually disintegrate, then there will be suffering, there will be dissatisfaction, there will be disappointment. So what is it then? That's part of our contemplation, that's the contemplative life, is to look at what's in the background, what is directing awareness. And so we use the word vijnana, so that's like the divided consciousness. Jnana means knowing or awareness. Vit is the divided, it's like division. So divided consciousness, divided knowing. The knowing is divided into six. It's divided into knowing the eye knowing forms, the ear knowing sounds, the nose knowing smells, the tongue knowing tastes, the body knowing tactile sensations, the mind knowing thoughts, mind objects. So it's divided knowing. So Lungpor Cha has this teaching that it's all the same knowing, but it's going out. It's going out these six, what we call the sense doors. And no matter who we are, that's our experience of life, is the vijnana, the divided knowing, dividing, the knowing, dividing, and going out these six sense doors. And when we say going out, that means like the way in India in the time of the Buddha, when you saw or perceived a form, like if I'm looking at the floor or I'm looking at a person, it's actually understood as the eye going out, or the awareness going out of the eye and actually coming into contact with that form, or the ear awareness actually going out of the ear and actually linking to a sound, and so on. And so that's what we call the asavas, or the outflows. We call those the outflows. And so, but with meditation, with mindfulness, what we're trying to do is we say staying in. We stay in, and so that's the kaya viveka, like we stay in the body, or we at least have a smaller, we're not going out as much. We're bringing the awareness in, into the body, into the mind, and looking directly at how is this. That's the kayagata sati, the body mindfulness. And so what's actually happening here? What actually is the body? What actually is the mind? And so we're doing this. There's a reason we do the practice, and the reason is to stop suffering. So we don't want to have any sense of dissatisfaction. And everything we do in our lives, it's geared towards trying to be happier, trying to have more of a sense of well-being. But it's misguided. A lot of what we do that we think is bringing us happiness actually ends up bringing us more suffering. We can take the very easy analogy I like is of like eating donuts, and you just, so we say we eat a donut and it's good. And so we eat another donut and it's also good, and we eat more and more and more. And what ignorance and delusion is telling us is that the more gratification we get from those donuts, then the happier we will be. But then we get indigestion and we feel sick. So that's suffering. And so that donut analogy, that's actually a very easy and tangible way of thinking about how what we normally think is causing us happiness is actually causing us suffering. And many, many things in our life are like that. We're doing things that we think it's bringing us happiness and well-being, or we think it's of benefit to ourselves and others, and actually it's bringing suffering, or it's bringing some sort of detriment to ourselves and others. So that's ignorance, that's delusion, that's what we have to retrain. So what did the Buddha say is the roots of bringing suffering to ourselves and others? It's ignorance and delusion, but it's also, the Buddha divided it into three. It's translated in many places as greed, hatred, and delusion. We could think of it as attraction, aversion, and delusion. And those three roots, when we act on those things, then that action will end up leading to suffering. And then the Buddha talked about non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion. When we act on those three things, that leads to a greater sense of ease and happiness and well-being. And when we act by body or speech on a, say, a mental factor of greed, hatred, or delusion, In fact, that can only lead to suffering. It can't lead to anything other than suffering. And so that's the law of karma. So when we act on greed, hatred, or delusion, it can only lead to suffering. And that's the incontrovertible nature of the Dhamma, the unchanging nature of the Dhamma, is that it can only lead to suffering when we act on those three things. And when we act on non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, it can only lead to happiness. It can't lead to anything else. It can't possibly lead to suffering. And that's when we start to see a little bit more clearly through our cultivation of mindfulness. Then as that becomes more clear, then it becomes harder and harder to act on greed, hatred, and delusion. And it becomes easier to act on non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, because the mind, the heart, on a very deep level, will very clearly see that it wants happiness, it doesn't want suffering. So if it sees that, oh yeah, without a doubt, non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion leads to happiness, it's gonna start to automatically go there. But it has to see that clearly. And that's why we have to see dukkha. We have to actually see what, with mindfulness, what was the result? What was the result of eating a pile of donuts? You know, was it happiness or was it suffering? When we see it's suffering, then, and when we really start to not just see that it's suffering, but to understand that it was suffering, then we won't do it again. This takes a long time, because there's going to be part of us that still feels that, well, cost-benefit analysis, it was still worth it. It was still worth it for that brief gratification, for that fleeting gratification. It was still worth it. I'm willing to put up with all the indigestion, all the pain, all the sickness that caused for that brief gratification. So do it again and again and again. And eventually, after we get sick enough times, or we hit our head enough against a brick wall enough times, then maybe we'll start to see the suffering of it more clearly, in a way that the heart, the mind won't want to go there again. Anger is a good example too. That's a very tangible one. Greed is a little bit harder to see than anger. Anger is a very tangible, unwholesome mental factor that we can see, that we can actually do a thought experiment. We can ask ourselves, has anger ever led to happiness? If I ask myself, anytime I've really been angry, has that actually ever either been happiness in that moment or led to happiness in a future moment? So if I'm really honest with myself, I could say, no, I can't ever think of a time that when I got angry, it was actually helpful for myself or others. Non-anger, was non-anger ever helpful? And I can think, well, yeah, anytime I've either let go of anger or haven't acted on anger, or I've acted on non-anger, I've acted on like an intention of kindness or wanting to help, it has been helpful. And not only it has been helpful, but it has been helpful every time. I can't think of a time where it wasn't helpful. So that's when we start to have some the practical insight into greed, hatred, delusion leads to suffering every time, and non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion leads to well-being and happiness every time. So once we get our mind around that incontrovertible nature of that Dhamma, the Dhamma, or the normality of the Dhamma, they call it Dhamma Niyamata, start to see that a bit more clearly. The issue here, though, the difficult part, is that with karma, the results aren't always apparent right away. There's a time lag, and that's why we don't see it. That's why we don't see it clearly. It actually takes time. Like, for example, if you follow precepts, it actually takes time to start to see the fruits and the results of holding precepts. It doesn't happen right away. Some of it happens right away. Like if you take on the five precepts, it just cuts out a whole bunch of suffering right away, but it's kind of subtle. We have to really reflect on it to see the benefits of it. This is just a brief Christmas offering. This is Dhamma 101, Kama 101. And I don't want to give too long of a talk, because if I talk about too many things, then we just forget everything. So I'll just leave it there for this evening.